This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. It's been said that Americans with disabilities are a forgotten people. But here in San Antonio, according to the U.S. Census, 14% of our population live with a disability. From medical care to employment to transportation, people with disabilities encounter barriers every day. How do we keep people who have a disability from being excluded? How do we emphasize inclusion? We have the American with Disabilities Act, that's in place, but do we need more? We invite you into our conversation about what's it like to be living with disability in San Antonio. The phone number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980, and you can send us an email to thesource@tpr.org. Today we have a full house in the studio. With us we have Mariah Kilborn. She is a training coordinator for the UTSA Small Business Development Office, and she is Miss Wheelchair America 2013. Terry Malden is with us. She is a mother of a woman with intellectual and developmental disabilities and former executive director of the Down Syndrome Association of South Texas. Michael Hardlow, he is the supervisor for Assisted Technology Department at the Lighthouse for the Blind. And Melanie Crawton is here. She is the executive director for Disability SA. Welcome. It's great to have all of you here today.
Thank you for having us.
So, Melanie, I'm going to ask you first off, how do we define disability? How broad of a term is that? We're going to hear say the word disability a lot today. What other words can we use?
People with disabilities are defined in so many different ways, and it means that you have a barrier that prevents you from, that maybe you have to overcome in order to be able to participate in the day-to-day activities of every other citizen in San Antonio. So it could be a cognitive disability where you need supports in understanding or learning. It could be a physical disability where you need supports with maybe a wheelchair or other mobility devices. It could be a sensory disability where you cannot see or hear as well as other people. Or it could even be a mental health disorder that prevents you from being able to just participate in full inclusion in our community.
Michael Hardo over at Lighthouse for the Blind, what do we need to know about your life as someone who deals with limited vision, as someone who is with disability?
Sure. So in my situation, I've dealt with blindness since I was 9 years old. I'm 43 now, and during that time, I've dealt with all level of vision loss. And I work with people on a daily basis with all manner of vision loss. And it's an employment situation. It's an education situation. We need means of gaining access to all the things that people deal with on a daily basis.
And when you say, I'm disabled, what does that mean to you? It's like, you're not disabled. You're totally able. You're not unable.
Sure. To me, disability, I look at it just as Melanie was saying, it's a barrier to be overcome. And it's not something that's unachievable. There's so much technology. There's so many resources today that the barrier can be overcome if we're aware of it.
But I want to see how we can maybe use language to not focus on the dis part of disability, but focus more on the ability part of disability and make sure that you're totally capable of practically anything these days with so much technology.
Sure. As an example, just my own job as a supervisor, I'm working with a staff who need access to technology. We work with college students who need access to technology, and I have to be aware of that technology myself just to accomplish my own job. If I'm working with spreadsheets, I'm working with Microsoft Word, there's assistive technology that allows me to access those things. And if I have someone come to me and they need something, I can hop on the computer and do it without any difficulty because I have that assistive technology. So the disability disappears. It's not a question of, do you have a disability? Can you do this? It's just, get this done. And I'm able to do that, of course.
Mariah, you're in a power chair, a wheelchair, and so tell me about why you're in that chair.
So I use a power chair for my mobility because I was born 3 months early and due to my premature birth was diagnosed with a condition called cerebral palsy, which is a physical disability that impacts the way my muscles move. It makes my arms and legs tighter, and so walking can be difficult, walking in balance, and the power wheelchair is able to help me navigate the community.
But, I mean, you work at UTSA, Small Business Development Office. You have a full-time job, and you're able to function as, you know, like a contributing member of, as a contributing member of society.
Yes, sir. And I really appreciate the mindset that you have open to inclusion and the possibilities that are able for all people. One of my main things that I like to do is encourage a mindset to be inclined for inclusion. And as someone with a physical disability, it's important to break down architectural barriers, but also attitudinal barriers.
You know, we're dependent on radio. This is radio, and we need people who can, you know, you speak very well, and it's great. But sometimes we come across this problem, and I wonder, and I would love to hear from the audience on this. Like, how far can we push some maybe somebody who may have problems speaking on the air and say, well, this guest, you know, they'd be a really good guest, want to talk about something, but they have a problem speaking on air. And, you know, can we burden, I don't know if that's the right word or not, but, you know, the listener with that as well. And so that's something that I wonder about, our own limitations that we have as a broadcaster, you know?
Well, I think that is a great platform for TPR's mission or vision to dare to listen. So when we're daring your listeners to be patient and give somebody who does have a verbal challenge to be able to communicate to your listeners their thoughts and ideas, that just dare to listen, take the time, and be patient.
Right, because they have something important to say, and this may be your only chance ever to experience that. Terry, we haven't a chance to talk to you yet, but tell me about your daughter real quick.
Oh, sure. My daughter is 32 years old. She has Down syndrome. So her challenges are cognitive as well as physical. She wants to be just like everybody else, and because of the barriers that we as a society have put in front of her, has made it challenging for her to live life as a typical 32-year-old. Now, we all know that she's not going to do just like you and I at 32 years old, but she should have the ability and the opportunity to go as far as she can, and she is limited on that because of the resources and the possibilities that are out there in our society, from, you know, housing to education to just being as independent as she's capable of doing.
She's getting ready to go to college?
She is. She is.
Is that because of the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act idea?
No, it's because we haven't had a program that is geared towards individuals with an intellectual disability until just this last year. So Palo Alto has come on board with a new program. So she will be enrolled this fall.
All right, we're going to continue the conversation. Our phone lines are open. We'll get to these callers. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. We're looking to have a lively, free-flowing conversation about what it's like to live with disability in San Antonio. What can we do to have more, greater, vibrant inclusion here in San Antonio with this? 210-614-8980. The source continues after this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. What's it like living with disability in San Antonio? With our having a great panel here this afternoon to talk about that. And our phone lines are open, 210-614-8980. And Maria is on the line. Maria, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, yes, sir. Hello.
Hi.
So I work in the San Antonio area. I provide assistive technology to individuals with disabilities. And it's become an issue I've noticed to get coverage from, like, state and federally funded healthcare systems, so much so that people are suffering because of it. And, I mean, it's taking months to provide people with equipment and assistive technology that they need, everywhere from power chairs to, you know, speech-language translators and things like that. And it's made my job very difficult, and I feel that there's just not enough charitable organizations either that, that provide funding for this equipment. And everything from like the Muscular Dystrophy Association to the DARS program have year-long waiting lists for help in this funding. And I very much feel that all of the healthcare cutbacks, or a lot of the healthcare cutbacks, have specifically been cut back from this area of healthcare, and it's become a real issue, and I see it every single day, and it makes it very difficult for me to do my job.
All right, Maria, thank you for your call. I appreciate you bringing up a great point. Melanie, do you want to talk about that, particularly about how we're seeing cutbacks in rehabilitation services, vocational training, healthcare, all sorts of areas that impact the community?
So every time our legislator goes to session, we seem to see one more Medicaid cut. And Medicaid is the number one funding source for supports that enable people with disabilities to have ability for inclusion in our community. And so all I can do is encourage people to talk to their legislatures and say, this is important. We need these supports for these people. We need these therapies. We need these equipment. And really advocate for the citizens of our community as a whole.
Terry?
I think there's a misconception that Medicaid is health insurance only, and these individuals rely on Medicaid for many, many sources, from, like Melanie said, adaptive tools, therapies, just the ability to function in our community. There's a whole lot of funding that tags along with that identification of receiving Medicaid funding. It's not just healthcare. And I think there's a little bit of a misconception with this whole healthcare bill and the whole movement. And I think that even our legislators aren't educated. So we need to make sure that this information is trickled to them so they understand what it is and what they're taking away from these individuals.
It's also closing assisted living facilities across Texas. We recently got the news that the largest assisted living facility for Medicaid recipients in Texas is going to be closing after years of budget deficits. This is after, we've seen shortfalls in their funding. And so it's leaving a lot of people wondering what's going to happen to all of these people who need these funds in order to survive and live in these facilities.
And it affects employment training. It affects transportation efforts. It funds a lot of things. It's not just healthcare.
All right. Another caller with Joey. And Joey, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, good afternoon. I graduated. I got out of high school in the 70s. They sent me to a school up in Waco. It was to the old TSTI. And they kind of bounced me from one class after the other, and it was in TSTI was notorious. They had people that had gotten out of prison, and they had one person that wound up on death row. When I got back from TSTI, the only jobs that were available to me were low-income, low-skilled jobs, and many of the people that I had to work with had criminal records. I was not able to support myself with these kinds of jobs. I wanted, I wanted to go into the print shop operations. That's why I went to school for training for that. But like I said, they every few months they say, well, you're not doing well. So they'd switch me to some other classes. And every few months, this is what happened. And then I came home, and I was living with my father for a while, and I said, I don't want to live like that. My father was an old military person, and I said, I want to live on my own. I want to be able to support myself and have transportation, but that's not what happened. And matter of fact, I was at a place where they called it a assisted living. They called it assisted living, but it was really an old woman that had been in the military, and it was really a group home. And the state finally took that woman's license away from her, and now it's just run by the city.
So how are you doing now, Joey?
Well, I'm living in a HUD place off of Fredericksburg Road. It's a small place, fortunately, and also on Medicare and Medicaid, and so.
Do you feel forgotten?
Yes, I just feel like I was just thrown in the pool and said, swim. You know, you either swim or you drown.
All right, Joey, thank you for the call. I appreciate you bringing us insight into your life. Employment is a critical part of inclusion, and we can train and we can give people education opportunities, but at the end of the line, there's got to be slots available for gainful employment that will pay a living wage. So Terry, talk about that. I know this is important to you.
Yes, David. My daughter is fortunate. She's employed with a doctor's office, which is just like everybody else. But her coworkers work full-time. They have families. They live on their own. And Stephanie gets to go to work every day and only work 4 hours because she's limited on the number of hours that she's able to work because of her income caps that have been put in place for her. And she has to come home because she has nowhere else that she can go live independently. She lacks the opportunities that these individuals have to gain education, to do well at her job. She is no longer able to receive a raise for a good job done because it affects her income, which could affect her benefits, which affects her Medicaid opportunities. So there's a lot of things that are like the domino effect. My husband and I are concerned with what happens should something happen to us. She is going to be lost in the society without the support and the income to be able to function on a daily basis. So yes, we're fortunate she has a job. Many of them do not because of the training opportunities that are available. That's just not there. And it all rolls back to funding. It all rolls back to people taking a chance on these individuals. They're excellent employees as long as they're given a chance and they are given the training opportunities that they need in order to do the job correctly.
And Mariah, you have a job. You're fully employed. How difficult was it for you to move into the workforce?
I'm very fortunate to be able to be employed with UTSA full time. I started in high school working with the DARS program, and from there was able to move into college and then internships and then full time employment. One thing that I have to commend UTSA on is their values-based leadership model that they entrust with all of their employees, and they focus on capacity to do the job and commitment, and then values in service, integrity, excellence, and innovation. And so in my employment with UTSA, I've almost been there 2 years in August, and they treat me just like anybody else in the office, and they focus on what I am able to bring to the office rather than my physical challenges.
Michael Guajardo, as you work with the community of the visually impaired, is this a common lament, having problems getting employment?
Oh, absolutely. When you consider around the country, I mean, for anybody, it's a challenge gaining employment. Well, magnify that times 10 when you're dealing with a vision impairment, because just about any office situation or any job situation, you're facing accessibility to something. In my case, or for individuals who are going to school, they have difficulty accessing print materials. We use our phones, we use books, documents, computers, everything is, there's something that we need to be able to read or access. And without that, without some sort of means to access those things, it puts limits and barriers on gaining employment. And then you also have the employers who discriminate. I mean, it does happen. It's against the law. We have ADA to try and prevent those things, but it does happen. And employers, and not always necessarily willingly, sometimes it's just ignorance certain employers are not aware that this technology exists. They're not aware that there's software that can magnify what's on the screen. They're not aware that there's software that can read things back to someone who's totally blind, and they can put together spreadsheets in Excel or put together a PowerPoint presentation. So a lot of it's just an education game. We at the Lighthouse, one of our missions is to go out and educate the community about the technology. That's certainly my main job, is not only making others aware of the technology, but also training them on that technology.
Well, talk about, Melanie, how this inclusion makes the workplace a better place, having people with disabilities, with, you know, people with their differences coming together to work at one location.
Well, inclusion always makes every environment a better place to be because we bring in a wealth of perspective and knowledge and the way we see the world. And it's not even just with people with disabilities. We want to make sure that there's inclusion in all aspects so that we can get that collaborative vision for our community and for our workplace and in the work that we do so that we can reach beyond a single focus and impact our community.
So how do we get that story out there?
We start to talk about it. So we're starting here today. The conversation continues tomorrow. We talk to our friends and families. We bring people along with us. We invite our friends with disabilities to join us in activities, and we make sure that the supports are there that enable them to achieve their ability in our community.
And Terry, you're an advocate for your daughter and folks like your daughter, and talk about your role.
Continue to be their voice. They can't speak for themselves. I don't think they see the barriers, which is good. But at the same time, they're being limited, and it's not fair.
Does she have some level of frustration? Or?
Oh, very. Yeah, she goes to work every day, and she sees her coworkers do things she can't do, and she knows she can't, and she says it's not fair. But I can, back to what Melanie said, the key is these individuals who are interacting with the coworkers and the neighbors and the friends of children and adults like those with disabilities, they will always remember their interactions. My daughter's coworkers will always remember working with her, and when they run into another person with a disability, they're going to treat them differently because of the relationship that they had with my daughter. And so that is what we're doing. We're communicating that we got to make sure that everybody understands there's no fear in these individuals. They're just like you and I, and they deserve a chance.
And Mariah, you're on campus at UTSA, and you're running maybe students who are in power chairs as well, and they look to you and say, wow, I want to, you inspire me.
I hope so. That would be great. My wish is for everyone with a disability to be able to be an active part in the community, in their employment and their enjoyment. And when I went to school at TLU, it was interesting because the dorms on campus were not accessible. I had to live in the sophomore dorms my entire time there, and I was able to help start breaking down those barriers and get things like ramps built and open mindsets. And now I've been able to see other students with disabilities be able to be successful in the college environment, and hopefully they'll go on and be able to be successful in employment as well.
All right, we're having a conversation here on Texas Public Radio on The Source this afternoon about what it's like to live with disability in San Antonio and how you can be an advocate for breaking down the barriers and for inclusion, bringing in more inclusion into our classrooms, our workspace, and our everyday lives, entertainment-wise as well, why that makes us a better, richer, more loving society. Give us a call of what your take on this and your experience. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You could also email us at thesource@tpr.org. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Stay tuned. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. What's it like living with disability in San Antonio? We've got a panel here taking on this in different angles, to different viewpoints. We have Mariah Kilborn. She is a training coordinator for UTSA Small Business Development Office, and she was Miss Wheelchair America 2013. Terry Malden, she is a mother to a woman with an intellectual and developmental disability, former executive director of the Down Syndrome Association of South Texas. Michael Guajardo is the supervisor and for the assistive technology department at the Lighthouse for the Blind. Melanie Crawthorne, is the executive director for Disability SA. And our phone line is 210-614-8980. All right, let's go over to Daniel. And Daniel, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm a parent of a 20-year-old daughter who has special needs and has recently transitioned from high school program to an adult day hab. And so I think we're very blessed in this community to have a number of organizations and people who support our community, and I'm very grateful including those who are on your panel today. So I appreciate your dedication. I also have a ministry for families with children with special needs called Faithability, and really want to emphasize with our faith communities, our houses of prayer and congregations, encourage to be welcoming. Welcoming many are, others are learning how, and to also be a voice in terms of advocacy. Some of the issues that were raised and that we're aware of in terms of budget and policy are very important, and I think for all of us to come together to, as was already said, as already mentioned, for families to voice that to our decision makers. So, again, very, very appreciative for everything.
But so, Daniel, here you are. I'm giving you the microphone. What do you want an everyday person in San Antonio to know about disability? How can, if you had a magic wand, what would you do to improve inclusion?
Well, I think for individuals and communities to understand that there are differences. At the same time, that doesn't mean that anyone is any better or any less because of that. So a sense of equality for those with special needs at whatever age, whatever background they come from, socioeconomic and so forth. So and participating. I think a lot of families with special needs children are unaware of many of the services that are available, of the resources that are there. So I think communication and cooperation among the organizations is the way to go.
All right, Daniel, thank you for the call. Transportation seems to be a big problem, a barrier. Barriers are meant to be overcome, but if we don't have to have them, let's not have them. And so, Mariah, how do you deal with transportation?
So for me, for transportation, because of my physical disability and my reaction time, I will never be able to drive a car. But my mom told me when I turned 16, instead of getting my driver's license, I would get my ViaTrans license. And so I've used ViaTrans for transportation since I was about 16 years old. They are a great resource in the community, in the fact that they even exist and we have them as an option. So I am grateful for that. But there are a lot of struggles with the service. Some things that can be improved are the time that it takes to use the service, and also the technology of the service could be improved as well.
Well, a lot of people think that we'll call these Uber and Lyft and other ride-hailing services. How is that working out for you?
I've been able to use it in other cities. When I went to Washington, D.C., I was able to use the Uber app, and it was amazing because on ViaTrans, you have to schedule your ride a day before or a week in advance. And when I went to D.C., I was able to use the Uber app and schedule an accessible ride within 30 minutes. Unfortunately, we don't have that service yet in San Antonio, but I'm hoping in the future that something like that will open up, or that ViaTrans will get an app similar to the Uber app so we can see where our rides are and schedule more effectively.
And Melanie, what about getting more accessible ride-hailing corporations in San Antonio?
So I know that Uber Wave, which is the accessible vehicle, I'm not sure what the W stands for, wheelchair accessible vehicle, is piloting in Texas. It has not made its way down to San Antonio, but I know that there are projections to get it this way. And I know in Dallas, even their taxi services have wheelchair accessible.
Isn't the yellow cab here wheelchair accessible?
They are accessible, but it takes a minimum of 2 hours per ride, usually.
Okay, so that's a cap. That's hard to deal with.
Yeah, that's a long wait time.
Michael Guajardo, with your vision being limited, how do you get around with transportation?
I utilize ViaTrans as well as the Uber service. And I tell you, I mean, once Uber came into town, it really opened things up for me. Not so much on the employment side of things. I mean, I had ViaTrans to get me to and from work during the week, but I mean, during the weekends, I mean, I want to get out as well participate in local activities. And it's kind of hard to do that spontaneously with ViaTrans, but Uber service with the cost that it comes at, services like Lyft and Uber, it makes it much better and much more easy to get around town whenever I need to.
Okay, and you wanted to add to that?
Yes, the other benefit that companies like Lyft and Uber will also provide is the small municipalities within San Antonio who do not have contracts with VIA, VIA Trans, will not access those communities. So as Michael was mentioning off air, there are employment opportunities in these smaller communities or outside Loop 1604 that people with disabilities just can't get to because they don't have public transportation to get them there.
Okay. Another caller, Sia is back. So let's, Sia, sorry to cut you off before. Are you ready to go?
Good afternoon.
Hi.
I would just like to say that I'm one of the people with a disability that's been relatively successful. I have a mental disability. I got through school. I was in the military before I got my disability. I got through school with the help of Voc Rehab, and I was able to get a job, sometimes not able to keep them, but that was part of the disability, is not being able to hold a job. But now I'm successful. I have limitations. I can't work a 40-hour week. But sometimes, because you can't see my disability, people have actually been rude to me. I have a disabled placard on my car, and when I park in some disabled spot, people have said, no, you can't park there, even though I have the placard.
Okay. All
because
right.
They can't see my disability.
Thank you for calling in and telling us that. You know, there's a lot of invisible disabilities that are out there. People have seizure disorders and developmental disorders. And well, on one hand, people are looking out for what they think is, hey, it's a handicapped spot, and we want to make sure that this is honored. And the other time, maybe they need to recognize that not everybody has that, this is visible. And so I would be interested in seeing what you have to say to that, Maria. Mariah.
For me, that would be a very difficult thing to deal with. My disability for me has always been something that people are able to see right off the bat, which is interesting, interacting with people when they can see that you have a disability. Sometimes there's perceptions there from that. So from my perspective, I can't imagine how challenging it would be if somebody wasn't able to see that you have a disability. That would bring a whole new set of challenges that are hard to imagine.
Sure. But they have the placard. I mean, should that just be enough, Melanie? You know, say, well, you got the placard, so therefore it's cool. Or
that's
not. Or
question.
People scamming those placards?
I'm sure. I mean, there's corruption in everything, so I'm sure there's people out there. But it doesn't mean that we should not respect the position that people are in. And whether we visually are able to see that they have a disability or not, we need to be respectful of people and the supports that they need to be able to be included in our society. One of the policies that have come down is I'm really excited about is when you have a communication symptom of your disability, there are now indicators that you can put on your driver's license that allow law enforcement to be able to know that this person has difficulty with their communication. And I think we're going to see a great benefit from that adjustment.
Okay, another caller, Joelle. Joelle, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. I'm disabled. I have cerebral palsy, and I've been applying for jobs, and, you know, they see me when I go for the interview, and they see me as being disabled, and they'll be telling me, no, we can't use you, and I just feel discouraged by that because I feel like they're not giving me a chance.
What kind of jobs?
I've been applying for retail, Walmart, Target, Macy's, just any kind of retail job, and I just feel like, you know, they don't want to give me a chance because of my disability.
All right, Joelle, thank you for calling in with that. You know, people with disabilities, they shop too. You know, if there's 15-17% of our population, people, you know, it's like, is that just a barrier that's dependent upon false assumptions of what the public is willing to bear out, Terry?
Yeah, and I think it's a fear. They're not giving them a chance. They don't know what they're capable of doing. Allow them to do the job, give them the training that they need, and then make the decision. I'm not saying every person is right for the particular job that they're applying for, but they should also be given the chance. So what skill sets, what I would like to know is what kind of skill set is he putting down that he maybe not, they're not seeing. It could be just the lack of filling out an application. The training maybe wasn't there, that he doesn't even know how to. I'm not saying this individual, but most individuals maybe don't know how to fill out an application. I did my own daughter's applications just because she didn't know how to complete it.
Okay. Our conversation continues as we talk about living with disability in San Antonio. How can we remove or soften some of the barriers that stand in the way and improve inclusion? The number to call in is 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies, talking about disability in San Antonio. Let's focus on the ability part of the word. The dis part of it, you know, that is just, that's the smallest part of the word, and we get past it right away and move right to ability, and that's what we're going to focus on. We were talking about jobs, employment opportunities for folks who have some disabilities, and Mariah, you are over at UTSA Small Business Development Office, and you're just kicking it over there, aren't you?
Thank you. Yes, it's been a great 2 years with the Small Business Development Center and the things we've been able to achieve as a team, and their belief in me, in my ability, has been amazing.
And you've increased the number of seminars.
Yes. Before I started, the UTSA Small Business Development Center was doing about 130 workshops a year, and now we're doing close to 300 workshops a year.
All right. Thank you so much for that. I appreciate it. And thanks for coming. And so let's get Pat on the air. Pat called in. Hey, Pat, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to give a shout out to Mariah. I am a client of the Small Business Development Council. She does a great job there. I've been thrilled to work with her. She's helped me a lot in my development as a small business owner. I've gone through the Leadership Values course. She was one of the mentors, and she does a great job. The whole group does a great job.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for calling in with that. Now, Becky. And Becky, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Okay. My daughter is disabled, and she's 28 years old. And while I would love for her to work, we know that she'll never be able to work. She has quite a few handicaps. She's wheelchair-bound, so she weighs about 100 pounds. And so we have to transport her from bed to wheelchair. She attends the ARC during the day and the week so that me and my husband can work. But one of the things I would like to see, and maybe San Antonio could be the pioneer in this, because I've contacted Washington ADA and I've emailed them and sent them numerous requests, is even though my daughter's very disabled and she is very active with us. Everywhere we go, she goes. If we go to parties, if we go dancing, she goes with us. And the thing that I struggle with is she's also in diapers. And so there is nowhere to change these adult children that that are functional in the way that, you know, they go out with their parents. We go to dinner. We go to the movies. If I have change your diaper, there's nowhere to change it. Even though we have family bathrooms, the only thing that's in a family bathroom is the little changing tables for babies, and I think those are like a 50-pound minimum. And she weighs anywhere between 95 and 100. I've had to take a blanket and literally lay her on the ground to change her diaper and then turn around and try to lift 100 pounds from the ground up to her wheelchair. That's the same for when we go shopping. I have to make sure there's like the handicapped dressing room, then, and hope that there's a little bench in there, and then I can lay her down and change her. And I've written to ADA. We have these beautiful, huge family rooms that there's plenty of room. All they need to put is like a 4-foot bench in there to allow parents like myself to be able to take my daughter out and not have to worry, where am I going to change her?
Okay, Becky, thank you for the call. Melanie, how, you know,
This is a significant problem. So if you care for an adult who is in diapers, you can't get out of the house for more than 2 hours, and it's a significant barrier to inclusion. One of the programs that Disability SA has for including people with disabilities in our community celebrations for Fiesta is our Fiesta Especial Carnival, our celebration day. And we actually go into the downtown carnival and set up adult diaper changing stations along with the ADA compliant porta potties and put out chairs at the rides and we have an RN on site and work with law enforcement not to engage in situations so that it causes an escalation rather than a de-escalation. But putting in an adult diaper changing station isn't difficult in many areas where there is enough space. It's just a matter of, for our stations, we just put in like a massage table, and it just helps families who have that need. It offers them the support they need to enable the ability to participate in our community, whether it's going out to dinner or going to a meeting or participating in community conversations in public places. So,
well, forgive my ignorance, but I never knew this was a problem.
It's a huge problem. So even an adult, and you can think about it, those little plastic things that come out in those family, I mean, past the age of four, probably it's kind of hard to get a child up there that's not going to pull it off the wall. So if you have a 12-year-old or a 14-year-old,
this is a solution that can be fixed.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Another caller. Got a lot of calls here trying to get them in. Karen. Hi, Karen. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm a friend of Terry's, actually, and her daughter and my son are also friends. My son, too, has Down syndrome, and I was interested in talking to you about perception and giving people with a disability a chance. As you may know, a lot of people with Down syndrome have significant features that identify that they may have some challenges. And one of the things that happens is people will turn to me or my husband when our son is with us and say, "How old is he?" And he'll turn to me and say, "Why don't they talk to me?" Or, as an example, today he happens to be off work, and that's because he's had surgery and he had to wear some protective eye gear for the type of surgery he had. And we stopped off after his post-op appointment, and a lady who was very, very nice in the grocery store said, "Oh, he is just precious. I bet he just loves wearing those goggles." And I didn't want to be rude, but I just thought, man, you know, he's been competitively employed for 15 years, you know, and he's 35 years old. So sometimes people treat very capable people as if, you know, they are very much less than. And I find that a real problem.
Okay, Karen, thanks for the call. Terry, what are some tips?
Respect these individuals. Give them a chance first. Again, back to employment, give them a chance. In society, they need to be given a chance. I always make sure that I call out those individuals that speak to my daughter respectfully. And as Karen mentioned, if you're going to speak to me, then she can answer for herself. And I always thank them for the respect that they've shown her. From anywhere from professionals, medical professionals, people out in the grocery store, they need to speak to this individual.
And Melanie?
And a lot of that is using age-appropriate language. So if you're talking to a 32-year-old, talk to a 32-year-old. If you're talking to a 2-year-old, great. You can say, "Oh, I bet he loves wearing those goggles." Mm-hmm. But the communication that we have with every individual on this planet should be age-appropriate. So don't assume what you don't know.
Okay, Linda is on the line. Linda, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Yeah, I have a 41-year-old daughter who's been paraplegic since birth and has always used a wheelchair. And so many of these issues that I'm hearing, I can so much identify with as she grew older. And it's like some things have changed and some things have not changed. But my call specifically is in regards to ViaTrans. She had to come to live with me about a year and a half ago. And in the area in which I live, she can have service Monday through Saturday. But if she wants to go to church on Sunday, if she wants to go to a family gathering on Sunday, she's missed holidays because of the issue. And they say, "We just don't go to your neighborhood on Sundays." So she has to literally go to her sister's house for the weekend so she can make it to church on Sunday. And then if she wants to go, say, to my sister's for a family gathering on a Sunday from her sister's house, they say, sorry, we don't go to that area on Sunday. And it really is frustrating for her. And I'm not sure, we've never been able to get an answer why. I don't live rurally. I don't live beyond 1604. And if we can have service Monday through Saturday, why is it prohibited on Sunday?
Okay, that's a question. And so, Michael Rojardo at the Lighthouse for the Blind, any ideas why ViaTrans is one thing or another?
It seems a bit arbitrary, but if I was a betting man, I'd probably say it has something to do with cost. There's probably some sort of money issue there. But it's I still don't see that as an excuse. I mean, people want to participate in society, and transportation should be the least of the barriers that we have to deal with. We have a public bus system. We have a paratransit system. I think we ought to be able, this is San Antonio, we're one of the 10 largest cities in the country. We ought to be able to resolve issues like that.
And Mariah?
I agree with the caller. I've faced some of the same issues with limited service areas as well. So hopefully in the future it is something we can improve.
Or have a discussion. I mean, part of the frustration was like, we don't understand why the situation mm-hmm. is the way it is. So that's a communication problem. And so we need to be able to make sure that the lines of communication stay open. And so if we can get an honest response about why things are the way they are, then maybe we can come up with solutions. But to shut down communication is not helpful. Mm-hmm. And so as we move forward, trying to go for more inclusion, So Terry, any thoughts? Make sure, how do we get people to say we're all cool?
We got a lot of work to do. I have a lot of work to do. But this is the start. Like Melanie said, just having these conversations, getting the word out, we continue this conversation, and we continue to advocate for those that cannot. And we have people like Michael and Mariah, who are the voices for individuals like my daughter who can't speak, and they're awesome. They're doing what we can. They share the same frustrations that we do as parents and all these individuals. We have a lot of children who are now babies and infants, and they're children, and they're coming up the stream, and things have improved tremendously over the years, but we've got a lot of work to do. And so my hope is that it's going to be a lot better for someone who has a young child later on.
I want to thank all of our panel. It was great having you here. Great discussion. We're going to have this again sometime as we continue to remind San Antonio to be a city of inclusion. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.